Now broadcasting in English. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. In today's program, a fresh edition of Mailbox, in which Pavla Horáková will answer your questions and reveal the answer to this month's quiz. That will be followed by Czech Life, in which Sarah Borůvka shares a cup of coffee with Ivy Govandová, a war bride who has spent most of her life in the Czech Republic, and will wind up with another part of David Vaughan's From the Archives, a popular history mini-series that Radio Prague is currently rerunning. All that coming up, and we start with Mailbox.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox. Thank you very much for all your reception reports and comments. More than a month after the death of the former president Václav Havel, we are still receiving letters of condolence from our listeners and readers from around the world. Michael Fanderis wrote from the United States.
We were saddened to hear of Václav Havel's death. I never read any of his works before, so recently we obtained the English versions of The Power of the Powerless, To the Castle and Back, and a very interesting video film, Citizen Václav Havel Goes on Vacation. We should all admire what the Charter 77 people did and went through. They should, especially now, meet and give talks to keep their efforts and ideas living on, to remind all people, not just Czechs and Slovaks, that our freedoms are vital.
Jayanta Chakrabarty wrote from India.
The Czech Republic and the world at large have become poorer in the sad demise of one of its most illustrious sons, Václav Havel. Not only was he a great champion of the oppressed, fighting for liberty and democracy, but also a harbinger of peace, seeking universal freedom from the shackles of tyranny and misrule. Being an author and playwright par excellence, he has proved to the world the invincible power of the freedom of speech and literature. Havel's essays and plays, mostly written underground during Czechoslovakia's dark days of communist rule, are the most incisive and eloquent analyses of the harm communism has done to the lives of individuals and society.
Vladimir Gudzenko follows Radio Prague in Russia.
Only a month ago, the great Czech politician, writer, former dissident and human rights fighter, Václav Havel, passed away. Sorry, I never had a chance to meet that great man, although Havel visited Russia several times and went to my favorite place in Russia's capital, the Andrei Sakharov Museum and Center.
Now, Stephen Hrabenich is our regular listener in Ohio.
I just wanted to comment on some of your recent programs. You have started the new year quite strong. I quite enjoyed today's panorama about Tvarushky. I have heard of this cheese before, and I must admit that I'm quite curious. I would like to visit the Czech Republic again someday, and when I do, I hope that I have the courage to try this specialty. This program reminded me of the return of magazine as a special at the end of 2011. I do miss that feature, and wish that it could return more frequently, perhaps as part of the rotation of monthly programs on Saturday, like Science Journal. I also like the spotlight about the Letná water tunnels. Is the ABC of Czech on your website? I searched for it, but I wasn't successful. I remember the series, and it is nice to hear it again. Is it me, or does Pavla actually sound younger, which obviously she was? I suppose it happens to all of us, but it is just more apparent when comparing old recordings to present day, which most of us do not have the opportunity to do.
All Radio Prague's Czech language series can be found in our archive. The older the series, the further back you need to go, and the younger I will sound, I suppose. Now on to our monthly listeners' competition. Hans-Werner Lollicke wrote from Denmark.
The name is Adolf Franz Karl Victor Maria Laws, or Adolf Laws, born in 1870 in Brno and died close to Vienna in 1933. He was born into a German-speaking family, had a turbulent life with three marriages, and as many men of genius, he was on the border of insanity.
Mary Lou Krennick from Texas wrote,
Adolf Loos opposed Art Nouveau and Beaux-Arts historicism. As early as 1898, he announced his intention to avoid the use of unnecessary ornament. He wrote his famous essay, Ornament and Crime. His Steiner House in Vienna in 1910 has been referred to by some architectural historians as the first completely modern structure. His best-known large structure is the Goldman and Szallach building in Vienna.
Charles Konecny from the United States wrote,
Loos knew what he wanted on the outside of the buildings he designed, and it wasn't much. He believed in simplicity, and as far as he was concerned, ornamentation on a structure was criminal because of the cost of labor and materials. So he wrote an essay called Ornament and Crime, where he went into some deep thinking to make his point. And even though he did stick to his no ornamentation theme, many of his buildings appeared to be rather handsome, sleek and stylish. His interiors, however, were not so austere. So while one can admire and be inspired by ornate structures, I guess it is good to have the Loos look in the mix. It makes me wonder what Adolf would think of the panel arcs.
Vladimir Gudzenko from Russia writes,
World-famous architect born in a German family near the Moravian town of Brno. His father was a stonemason and died when Adolf was 9 years old. Adolf Loos was also an essayist and a theorist of architecture. He published his own journal, and his architecture styles are considered as modernism and purism.
Colin Law from New Zealand.
Adolf attended schools in Brno until the age of 13, when he moved to the Benedictine school at Melk Abbey in southern Austria. At 17, he studied at the construction department of the technical school in Liberec, from where he graduated in 1889. In 1890, at the age of 20, he briefly joined the Technical University in Dresden, but in the same year he entered 1 year of compulsory military service. In 1893, Adolf Loos went to the USA, where he initially earned a living by washing dishes and as a bricklayer and paver. His 3 years in the US greatly influenced his future career. He returned via Paris and London to Vienna, and he began working as an architect.
Jayanta Chakrabarti writes from India.
Introduced to the art of building at a tender age while working in his father's stone masonry shop in Brno, Adolf Loos rose to be one of the most outstanding pioneers of contemporary architecture. His radical, innovative outlook on life was reflected in his works, which were embodiments of austere beauty, then quite unknown outside Austria. His theories were incorporated in a short essay, Ornament and Crime, wherein he emphasized that excessive ornamentation was a crime and morally incorrect in the light of wastage of materials and economics of labor. Loos' experiment with the classical tradition, passion for all aspects of design, lifestyle and taste, are elaborated in his literary work, Spoken into the Void.
Thank you very much again for your well-researched answers. This time, our little prize goes to Vladimir Gudzenko from Russia. Congratulations, and your parcel will be posted first thing on Monday. Now I have a brand new question for those of you who would like to give it another shot this month. Regular listeners to Radio Prague are probably aware of the fact that the word robot is of Czech origin. This month, we'd like to know the name of the Czech author who first introduced it to the public, even though he did not coin the word himself. Please send us your answers by the end of February to english@radio.cz. This is also the address for your reception reports, comments and questions regarding our programs. Please keep them coming. Until next time, take care.
My thanks to Pavla, who will be back in exactly 4 weeks' time, so please do keep those letters and emails coming. Now, here's a fresh edition of Sarah Borůvka's popular feature, Czech Life.
Ivy Kovandová is one of the few remaining so-called war brides in the Czech Republic. War brides are English women who marry Czechoslovak pilots or soldiers stationed in the UK during World War II. An estimated 10,000 soldiers and about 2,500 pilots from Czechoslovakia fought alongside the Allies, and many of them married local women. Some of those women accompanied their husbands back to their native land after the war, but most left Czechoslovakia due to the strain that the arrival of the communist regime placed on their lives, or simply because they felt lost and homesick. Ivy Govandová, however, still lives in her cozy apartment in Prague's Vršovice neighborhood and says she has never even considered leaving. Just a few weeks ago, she celebrated her 90th birthday. I recently visited Ivy at her home, where she told me all about her adventurous life over cake and coffee.
Well, I was born on the coast near the sea, and we used to use the coast as our playground in the good weather. The sea was so cold that we were never allowed to bathe in the sea. We were only allowed to bathe in the little lakes that had been made by the sea when it came in.
When she turned 85, Ivy's children gave her a very special gift. They published her memoirs under the title Tapestry from Suffolk to Prague. The book covers nearly 7 decades of her interesting life. Here is a passage from the chapter on her childhood.
It was 10 months to the day after Mum and Dad married that I, Ivy Norman, was born in a little rustic thatched cottage with diamond-shaped leaded windows at Covhythe on the cold East Suffolk coast, an area of splendid isolation. There was no shop, no school or doctor in this seaside hamlet of about 30 souls, the nearest being 3 miles away.
Ivy was from a poor background and says she has always been intensely aware of social injustice. The epigraph to her book reads,
"Daughter of a Suffolk farm labourer and a mother from a family of North Sea fishermen, asked at the age of 7, why are they rich and poor? There always will be, Ivy, and we were born poor," said mother. An answer she mulled over with her little brother and decided that when they grew up, they would try to put things right.
In 1938, British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain signed the Munich Agreement, permitting Nazi Germany to annex Czechoslovakia's Sudetenland. A year later, President Edvard Beneš established the Provisional Czechoslovak Government, with Paris its capital in exile. Yet another year later, in 1940, unsuccessful negotiations over its diplomatic status, as well as the impending Nazi-German occupation of France, forced the Czechoslovak government in exile to withdraw to London. Ivy was a young woman when all of these tumultuous events were unfolding. She was only 17 when the war erupted. In 1941, she started working as a radar operator. In her book, she recalls the day she decided to join the forces.
It was one afternoon in August of 1941 when in Lowestoft town centre I answered the call of Lord Kitchener, having noticed him pointing his finger at me from a recruiting poster, demanding, "Are you doing your bit to help your country?" "No," I said to myself, "no, I'm not." And with no further ado, walked into the recruiting office. There I was asked which of the forces I would prefer. "Wherever I'm needed most," I replied. Such a spontaneous reaction seems quixotic today. It was not only an urge to help the country that moved me to join the armed forces, but the thought of so many small countries not standing a chance against that mighty war machine.
As she told me recently, Ivy was very eager to join the forces, something that was not unusual in those days.
I was 17 and I couldn't get into the forces early enough. And my brother joined. He was younger than me and gave his wrong age in order to get into the Navy. And when I was 18, I joined the Army. And I was working on radar, the first radar that ever came out, the first, second, and third. And then I left after 3 years because I became pregnant.
Ivy met her husband, Oldřich Kovanda, with whom she was to have four children in 1942. Even though that was 70 years ago, she still recalls the story of how they met.
It happened on the train. I was going back from leave. I was going back from the East Coast to London on leave. And the train was just ordinarily full. And then we'd stopped at the first capital city, that was Ipswich in Suffolk, and the Czechs got on, and so many Czechs, I thought this is going to be terrible, but I had my newspaper there, and I didn't bother very much. And then one Czech stood by my wagon, the seat, and just kept staring at me, and I could still blush in those days. And I kept blushing and wished he'd go away. And then I was still reading my papers, and he said, no, I said, do you speak English? And he said, yes. So perhaps you'd like my paper. So I gave him my paper, and he gave it me back after a few minutes, and he'd written on it, I would like to know you better. And so I wrote back and said, I'm not interested in knowing you. I have a boyfriend, and he's very jealous. And my husband said, if he's jealous, then drop him at once. Jealousy doesn't bring any happiness.
It took some convincing for Oldřich, but he eventually managed to get Ivy to at least write to him.
But I didn't reply to that. And then we got to Liverpool Street, and the trains emptied, and I kept sitting in my seat thinking the Czechs will all be gone. And I was the last one to get off the train, but there was my husband waiting to help me off, and all the Czechs had gone. So he said, will you come to have a cup of tea with me? And I said, no, I have no time. I have to get back to camp, and I have a long way to go. I was going to the north of England. And so he said, well, will you write to me? I said, yes, I'll write you when I get back. But you must, and then I'll give you my address. I said, you don't need that. Your address is on the newspaper. He had left it there. And so when I got back to camp, I wrote to him at once and wrote a letter. I promised to write to you, so here is the letter. And then the boy I'd left behind, I said, we won't be able to carry on like this, and gave him a reason for not, I don't know what it was. And so he was quite upset, and then with my husband, we kept writing almost every day about most interesting things on education and the politics and so on.
Because of her family background, Ivy did not get to enjoy a full education. She says that most of all, she was fascinated by her husband's intellect and interests.
I left school at 14 in tears because I just learned how interesting mathematics is. And because I couldn't stay on to continue with mathematics, I was very upset. And so I went to work as a domestic servant. Have you ever seen the film Upstairs and Downstairs? And this was the sort of thing that I experienced for 2 or 3 years when I left school. And so I thought I couldn't. He was extremely interesting, and I was not in love with him at all. I just found him very interesting. And so he came to meet me in London when I went back to see him, because he'd been confined to barracks for something. I don't know what he'd done, but something against the rules. Not being as clever as I was, I used to do a lot of things against the rules, but I always got away with them.
Ivy always liked swimming against the tide, and maybe that has made her life more interesting. We will continue her fascinating life story in the next episode of Czech Life, when we will hear about her arrival in Czechoslovakia, her life behind the Iron Curtain, and her only regret.
So
Sarah Borufka with Czech Life. And if there's any aspect of Czech life that you're interested in learning more about, well, just drop her a line at radio.cz. And now for the history buffs among you, here is David Vaughan with From the Archives.
In last week's From the Archives, we featured Martin Luther King, interviewed by Czechoslovak Radio in 1963. But Dr. King was not the first civil rights campaigner to address Czech and Slovak radio audiences. 4 years earlier, in June 1959, Paul Robeson came to Prague to take part in an international left-wing cultural congress. Robeson was a man of many talents, singer, actor, athlete, writer, and civil rights activist. He never concealed his sympathies with the communist regimes of the Eastern Bloc, and his political views, combined with the color of his skin, earned him virtual pariah status in many sections of the U.S. political establishment. This culminated in 1950, when he was refused a passport. But at the Prague Congress in 1959, with the Cold War at its height, Robeson was given a rapturous welcome. He opened his talk by greeting the audience in Czech.
Jak se máte? It is a great privilege and pleasure to be with you again here in Prague, to greet my dear friends, the people of Czechoslovakia, and to greet you, many friends from many lands. My deepest thanks for your concern over many years, for your help, and for your encouragement.
In his speech, Robeson went on to argue that great art comes from the people, and he pointed to a couple of Czech examples. The composer Leoš Janáček, who tried to incorporate the rhythms of natural speech into his music, and then Antonín Dvořák, who famously took inspiration from African-American music.
Your great Dvořák came to our land and heard the beautiful songs of my folk and pointed out to us in America that here was the basis of a great musical art springing from a people who had been torn from Africa and brought in slavery to the lands of America. Your great composer came there and pointed out that this was the base and could be the base of great music and proved it by a great symphony and by string quartets. And his influence still has great importance in America today.
And it was not long before he broke into song, this time in Russian, a language in which he was near fluent.
Мелодія тож саме, мелодія язика. Да стих я выше власти. Шестою ж год я царствую спокойно. Но счастья нет моей.
This was not the first time that Paul Robeson had sung in Prague. Back in May 1949, he had taken part in the Prague Spring Music Festival, as his wife Eslanda remembered in an interview for Czechoslovak Radio, recorded in London in 1964.
One of the things Paul has always been very grateful for was the fact that your government asked our government for Paul to come to sing at the Czechoslovak Musical Festival. This was a very marvelous thing because it was an official governmental request at a time when our government was keeping Paul from traveling anywhere for any reason.
Eslanda Robeson there, taking us back to the nervous days of the Cold War, when art and politics were never far apart.
And And I'm afraid that edition of From the Archives has brought us to the end of today's program. You will find all our programs in text and sound at radio.cz. And should you like to contact us, then the address to write to is english@radio.cz. This is Danielle Lazarova saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye.
Thank you. vous écoutez Radio Prague.